Welcome to the Local Business Playbook. I'm Alex, and today we're diving into something that is genuinely reshaping how people live and work, especially here in Florida. We're talking about the co-living model, micro apartments meets co-working, all under one roof. And I'm Jamie. Okay, I have to say, this topic has been on my mind a lot lately, because you just see it popping up everywhere, especially in places like Miami, St. Pete, Orlando. It's like someone finally said, what if your apartment building also had a really great office? Exactly. And it sounds simple when you put it that way, but the business model behind it is actually really fascinating. So let's break it down for our listeners who might be hearing the word co-living for the first time. Right, so co-living is essentially a modern housing concept where residents get a private bedroom, sometimes a micro apartment, sometimes just a room, and then they share common spaces. Think kitchens, lounges, co-working desks, maybe a rooftop. And the key word there is co-working, because this isn't just like a college dorm situation. These spaces are intentionally designed for people who work remotely, digital nomads, freelancers, entrepreneurs. Oh, that's such an important distinction, because a dorm is about, you know, surviving your freshman year. Co-living is about building a lifestyle and a community around how you actually work and live as an adult. So who's actually moving into these places? Like, what does the typical co-living resident look like? Great question. It skews younger, a lot of millennials and Gen Z, but honestly, it's broader than that. You've got remote workers who relocated during or after the pandemic. You've got entrepreneurs who want to be around other driven people. And you've got people who are new to a city and want a built-in community from day one. That last one is huge. Moving to a new city is lonely, and traditional apartments don't really solve that. You could live next to someone for 2 years and never learn their name. Exactly. And co-living operators know that. They actively program community events, Skillshare sessions, networking nights. It's part of the value proposition. You're not just paying for square footage, you're paying for access to a curated community. Okay, so let's talk about the business side of this, because I think that's where it gets really interesting for our local business audience. How does a co-living space actually make money? So the revenue model is clever. Instead of signing long traditional leases, co-living operators typically offer flexible monthly memberships. Residents pay one bundled price that covers rent, utilities, Wi-Fi, cleaning services, and access to all the amenities.
Wait, so it's kind of like a subscription model for housing?
That is exactly what it is. And that framing is so useful because it explains why operators can charge a premium. The convenience factor is massive. You don't have to set up electricity, negotiate Wi-Fi, buy furniture, it's all included. For someone who moves frequently, that's incredibly valuable.
And from the operator's perspective, that flexibility is actually a feature too, right? Because you can turn over units faster, adjust pricing based on demand, maybe even do shorter stays for people who are just in town for a month.
Yes, and some operators are layering in additional revenue streams. Day passes for the co-working space, event space rentals, partnerships with local businesses. I've seen some co-living spaces in Miami that have partnered with local coffee roasters and fitness studios to offer member discounts.
Oh, that's such a smart local business angle right there. If you're a small business owner in Florida and there's a co-living space in your neighborhood, that is a potential partnership opportunity sitting right there.
Totally. Think about it. Co-living residents are typically young professionals with disposable income who are actively looking to explore their new city. They're your ideal customer, and the co-living operator has already done the work of gathering them in one place.
So what does the actual physical design of these spaces look like? Because when you say micro apartment, I'm imagining something pretty tiny.
Ha, yes, micro is not an exaggeration. We're often talking about private units that are anywhere from 150 to maybe 350 square feet. But here's the thing, the design is incredibly intentional. Every inch is optimized. Murphy beds, built-in storage, convertible furniture.
It's like the IKEA showroom dream meets real life.
Honestly, kind of. But then you step outside your unit and you have this beautifully designed common area that feels like a boutique hotel lobby or a really cool co-working space. So the trade-off is, your private space is small, but your shared world is expansive.
I love that framing. Your private space is small, but your shared world is expansive. And I think that really reflects a broader cultural shift too, right? Younger generations are placing less value on owning or renting big private spaces and more value on experiences and community.
Absolutely. And Florida is such a prime market for this because you have this massive influx of remote workers. People who left New York or California and came here for the weather, the tax advantages, the lifestyle, they arrive not knowing anyone. And co-living is a ready-made solution.
Are there specific Florida cities where you're seeing this take off the most? Miami is definitely the leader right now. It's become a bit of a digital nomad hub, especially since the whole Miami tech scene narrative took off a few years ago. But you're also seeing growth in Tampa, St. Petersburg, and even some smaller beach towns that have strong short-term rental markets. Right? And I imagine the regulatory environment matters a lot here, because Florida cities have very different rules around short-term rentals and zoning. That's such a good point, and it's honestly one of the biggest challenges for co-living operators. The model sits in this kind of gray zone. It's not quite a hotel, not quite an apartment complex, not quite an Airbnb. So operators have to navigate zoning laws, licensing requirements, and sometimes outright opposition from traditional housing advocates, which is a reminder that even really innovative business models have to deal with very old-school regulatory systems. Always. And the operators who succeed long-term are the ones who engage proactively with local government, who frame their model as a solution to housing challenges rather than a disruption. Because in cities with housing affordability issues, which is most of Florida right now, co-living can actually be part of the answer. That's a really interesting reframe. Instead of being seen as a luxury product for tech bros, it becomes a housing solution. Exactly. And some operators are leaning into that, partnering with cities, offering workforce housing tiers, working with local nonprofits. It's a smarter long-term play than just going premium all the way. So if someone listening to this is a local entrepreneur thinking, hey, I want to get into this space, what do they need to know? First, do your market research. Understand who's in your target neighborhood. Is there a population of remote workers or digital nomads? What's the current rental market like? Can you compete on the value proposition of community and convenience rather than just price? And I imagine the real estate piece is critical. Finding the right building or negotiating the right lease structure. Huge. Many co-living operators don't actually own the buildings. They master lease them, which means they lease the whole building from a landlord and then sublease individual units to residents. It's a way to scale without massive upfront capital, but it does carry risk if occupancy dips. So it's kind of like a hotel management company model applied to residential real estate. That's a great analogy. And like hotel management, your operations have to be really tight. Community management, maintenance, events programming. It's a hospitality business as much as it's a real estate business, which means the people side of this is just as important as the physical space, if not more important. The community manager role in a co-living space is genuinely one of the most critical hires you'll make. They set the tone, they resolve conflicts, they make residents feel at home. A bad community manager can tank your retention rates. Okay, so we've talked about the model, the market, the design, the challenges. Let's zoom out for a second. What's the big picture here? Where is co-living headed? I think we're still in the early innings. The pandemic accelerated remote work adoption in a way that created permanent demand for flexible living arrangements. And as long-term lease models feel increasingly rigid to a mobile workforce, co-living is going to keep growing. And Florida specifically is so well positioned for that because of the in-migration trends. People are still moving here in huge numbers, right? And for local businesses, for entrepreneurs, for real estate investors, this is a trend worth paying attention to. Whether you want to start a co-living space, partner with one, or just understand how your neighborhood is changing, this is the future of urban living playing out in real time. I love that. The future of urban living happening right here in our backyard. Jamie, this has been such a great conversation. I feel like we could keep going for another hour.
Same.
And if you want to keep the conversation going, head over to our website. You'll find show notes, additional resources, and links to everything we talked about today. We're at thelocalbusinessplaybook.com. Subscribe, leave us a review, and share this episode with a fellow Florida entrepreneur who needs to know about this. We'll see you next time on the Local Business Playbook.